Welcome to We Empower, the radio show that inspires you to embrace your potential, resilience, and strength. In these challenging times, we're here to help you unlock your power to overcome obstacles, pursue your dreams, and shape a brighter future. I'm Anna Bertanes, your host for this empowering hour. Welcome, everyone, to another exciting episode of We Empower. I'm thrilled to have you all with us today. So sit back, relax, and get ready to be inspired. Let's make today count. In today's episode, we will have a great guest to introduce. It's Holger Holland, passionate about sustainability and digital innovation, a social entrepreneur and climate advocate for a cleaner, better world. A lot of people know him because of World Cleanup Day. So followed by a great book, we will have a lot of fun in today's talk show. So first, let's kick things off with a song selected by Holger.
I'll pick my battles cause I know I'm gonna win the war. I'm not rattled cause I shattered all of this before. Steadier than steel cause I'm ready with my shield and sword. Back on the saddle cause I gathered all my strength for more. And I won't bow, I won't. No, I'm not afraid to do whatever it takes. I'll never bow, I'll never break. Cause I'm a warrior, I fight for my life like a soldier. All through the night and I won't give up. I will survive, I'm a warrior. And I'm stronger, that's why. I'll be fighting through the day and night. I'll be marching through the darkness till the morning light. Even when it's hard, I like the armor, you will see me shine. No, I won't stop and I won't drop until the victory's mine. And I won't bow, I won't break. No, I'm not afraid. I'll never bow, I'll never break. Cause I'm a warrior, I fight for my life like a soldier. All through the night and I won't give up. I will survive, I'm a warrior. And I'm stronger, that's why I'm alive. I will conquer, time after time, I'll never. Like a soldier, all through the night, and I won't give up. I will survive, I'm a warrior. And I'm stronger, that's why I'm alive. I will conquer, time after time, I'll never falter. I will survive, I'm a warrior.
Passionate about sustainability, digital innovation, social entrepreneur, and climate advocate for a cleaner, better world. Welcome, Holger Holland, here in the show.
Hello, Annabelle. Nice to be here.
You started out a song, We Are Warriors, and I think it couldn't be more actual than ever. having a kind of anthem for resilience, strength, and unity in the face of adversity, but also celebrating courage of those who keep fighting despite hardships, emphasizing the true various stand strong. Is it something special which you combine with listening to the song?
Yeah, there are a lot of stories, not only, or yeah, mainly maybe the time of COVID, because everybody knows that time, and it was important, or it was a main impact of everybody of us, and it shows these times showed how important everybody is, and that we can, if we unite, that we can change big things, and that we can handle big things. And this, it was only the COVID time, and we are in the same in the moment. So we need the warriors, and this is the motivation in that song, that we exactly need everybody.
I mean, I really love working together with you because of this, not only because of this attitude you have, that fighting is not something against, fighting is something for. And we bring all people together, and it's this togetherness which is always full of hope when I think about you, the things you do with World Cleanup Day and everything further. Were there aspects in your childhood which shaped your passion for activism, for environmental activism, but also for your love for people?
Yeah, it starts earlier. Maybe I start with my growing up, and I growing up at a child in a low mountain region. I was surrounded by nature from an early age, and forest, the clear streams and diverse wildlife shaped my childhood and awakened in me a deep connection to the environment, to the nature. I remember countless hours spent outdoors, wherever exploring the forest and observing animals. All these things, this immediate proximity to nature, made me aware in a really early stage of my life.
Sounds ideal, because if I think nowadays about kids who have no connection of the with the nature, how should they fight, or why should they fight for something they don't know? And they've never explored what it means to them. So I think it is a really important message what you're sharing with us, how important it is to grow up in something where you know what it means to you and then be able to fight for, right?
Yeah. I think mostly the biggest issue is if you don't know where's the assassin or what you have to fight for. And I remember also my childhood, it was 1986, yes, 1986, and we have the nuclear explosion in Chernobyl, the Chernobyl disaster. It shocked the world, not only the world, it's around 1,000 kilometer away from where I live. And the effects were felt even here. Yeah, suddenly we're no longer allowed to collect and eat mushrooms or wild berries, because nobody knowing is it contaminated or not. It was not to see. So the problem wasn't to see. And it was so huge and so big. And as a child, this was a highly impact for me. And not only for me, I think for mostly people in Europe and Germany and in this area.
This is a very important topic, because I think, I mean, Chernobyl, I was a something which was a huge thing in the memory of people, and I mean, as you described it, we couldn't see it, so we could just know, or we knew about what people said about it, but if something is contaminated, we didn't see it. There was nothing, the change of color, or no quick change of the size of something. Is this maybe also something which is a problem for the people nowadays to fight for climate change, because they don't see the disasters often next to them? Is it that they can't face it, and it would be just a fear which could make them getting the idea that they have to fight for something?
I think, yes, there is a similarity, because climate change takes time. It's a long-term process in a global scale, and it's not to see in big things. Okay, we know every year, from year to year, we have less snow and all these things. We see that, but it's so slow that we can't react. It's a little bit like this nuclear invisible issue.
I mean, you grow up, you said, in the nature. Have you had role models which were besides you, where you thought about, where you read about, where you talked with them about, and how did they influence your environmental journey?
Yeah, figures like Jane Goodall deeply inspired me. Her tireless commitment to the planet and her groundbreaking research on chimpanzees showed me how important it is to stand up for our environment. And also local environmental activists who were very active in passion mode work to preserve our natural resources also had a major influence on my path, like Greenpeace and also WWF. All these organizations, huge organizations in a global scale, but work on the local thing. Their dedication made it clear to me that every individual can make a difference, and motivated me to make my own contribution to environmental protection.
Mm-hmm. And what personal experience were it which made it that you became a social entrepreneur focused on exactly these topics? I mean, it could have been also possible that you fight for birds or for other animals, but you concentrated on plastic waste.
Yeah, my main passion for environmental activism was awakened by the realization that economic action, environmental protection, and social justice are directly linked. This understanding is based on the concept of the triple bottom line from the 90s. John Elkington, yes, makes the first papers about that. And this considers ecological, economic, and social aspects are linked and equally. So this was the...
And how did your environment react on that? Your friends, your family, did they understand it? Did you get followers? Did you get even people who said, okay, come on, we are part of this?
Yeah, in the early days of the commitment to environmental protection, I often encountered skepticism and lack of support. Many people were not aware of the urgency of environmental issues like plastic. Plastic is good, plastic is cheap, plastic is perfect. Where's the problem? They don't see the issue, what's behind this great thing. Plastic is good in one way, but on the other hand, if it is in the environment under not on control, then it is a huge problem. And yeah, this was in the beginnings, it was hard, and but to overcome these hurdles, I specifically sought exchange with like-minded individuals, built a network of committed people, so together through perseverance and advocacy, we were able to raise awareness in society and successfully implement initial projects like World Cleaner Day.
And how do you balance life, or have you balanced life with that? Because high involvement in these topics means sometimes that you forget about private things or other things, because when you're so committed, I know it by myself, then it's sometimes hard to say, okay, now it's stopped because of eating, of sleeping, of doing other things, because we want to save the world.
Yeah, sometimes it's hard. yes, I think the same more, it's hard. But yes, as an environmental activist, I experience that profession and vocation are increasingly emerging. So nevertheless, to ensure a balanced relationship between my commitment and my private life, I rely on a clear scheduling and prioritization of my tasks. Effective time management, like time boxing, it's a tool, helps me to recognize the urgency and importance of tasks to act accordingly, like the Eisenhower principle. So I use that private and in business case, and also for the topics in the NGO, and this helps me survive.
And do you have any hacks you can share with us? How you keep your time management, how you keep yourself fresh and vital?
Yeah, talk about time boxing. Time boxing is really important. Nothing is more a problem than ineffective meetings. We have so much meetings today, also in the past, but today it's easier because it's in digital way and we can do it the whole day, 16 hours, 18 hours. But ineffective meetings, 2-3 hours, make no sense. Make it short, half an hour, 15 minutes are totally enough normally. A duration of a pizza is a good time set for a meeting. If the pizza is gone, the meeting is also gone. And this helps, yes. And also Eisenhower principle, yeah, to know what is important, what is urgent. So, and to go with this way, this helps a lot.
Yeah, that sounds good. And because otherwise, I think you couldn't have managed to keep so many balls rolling at the same time. You are the co-founder of the World Cleanup Day Initiative in Germany. What motivated you to doing this, and what struggles, obstacles, but also things were on this way?
Yeah, the vision was this. The vision of mobilizing people worldwide for a cleaner environment inspired me to establish World Cleanup Day here in Germany as part of a global movement. I wanted to send a strong message against environmental pollution and raise awareness about the importance of cleanliness and resource conservation. That was the main thing behind it.
And can you share a memorable experience from organizing a cleanup event? Because I know it can be very challenging, but also emotional.
Yeah, there are hundreds of impressions in the last years, but one thing was in first World Cleanup Day. It was in 2018. We did it first time on World, and I experienced a particularly on that day, we were situated in Berlin of one of the main cleanups, and I remember an elderly lady who participated in one of this cleanup. It was Hasenheide, I really know in the moment. So, and she came with her grandchildren and said in the talk we had, "I'm here for their future, for her future." And this experience showed me how cross-generational the commitment to our environment is, and how strong the collective will can be to bring about positive change. So it's possible, but we have to work together. And it's more than one generation. Things take time. And yeah, this is one of thousands of these situations.
I just you just created a story in my mind. I got because if I think about it, it's so great if it's different generations being part of it, giving the message to the next generation, but also working together. We often think too much in boxes, which weakens us unnecessarily. And how do you engage communities to participate in large scale cleanup efforts? Because I mean, the one action is something, but staying there, staying part of this.
Yeah, this is one of the biggest issues. Again, you ask the right questions. Yes, Annabelle. We use targeted public relations. So we need radio stations, media stations to partner with us. This is one thing. In the last years, we created cooperation with schools. We have more than 40,000 schools in Germany. With 10%, we are in contact for the action days. We go to the municipalities, to the local organizations in the municipalities. And so we use the main idea of triple bottom line. So we bring politicians, companies, organizations, and civic society together and to show that we can work together. And on that day, but not only on that day, because this is the action day to show the issues that you have in the global scale. But then an everyday working starts exactly in the schools and also in the companies. Yeah, that is what we use.
This is super important. Thank you so much for your insights on that. And I can't wait asking further questions. We have a small break of 2 minutes and then we continue talking. Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
I'm talking to one of the most important social entrepreneurs and climate advocates for a cleaner, better world. I'm talking to Holger Holland. We started again talking a little bit about his childhood, about what makes him being staying on this environmental topic, which is not always easy, I can imagine, especially in a world we are facing right now. So, Holger, I'm very happy to have you here. We talked already about what motivated you to co-found the World Cleanup Day, and you shared a few really memorable situations with me about what cleanup means on a daily basis in exactly the moments where you're all together. What strategies have proven effective in sustaining long-term community involvement in environmental projects? What are your strategies there? You started talking about schools and how you bring it into schools. Is there something else you would like to mention?
Yeah. One of the main things are involving the community in decision-making processes in the local community is really important. Continuous educational opportunities is the second one. So municipalities can do that, schools can do that, and also companies can do that. It's important that we not only educate our children, we have also to educate our employees. It's the same. So everybody has to do to work in that, and we have to visible show also visible results. It's important to foster long-term engagement. People want to see itself, and they want to see that something changes. And but this is one of the main issues because climate change and all these topics and sustainability is long-term orientated, multi-generations. So we talk about 25, 50, 100, more than 100 years. If you look in the forest, we talk about one forest, 200, 300 years. This is what sustainability is. And this is really hard to understand for the people, but the people want to see itself. And this is what we try to realize.
Yeah, I mean, we know that we are living in a world which is not easy, where people often like to see results just with a snip, and where they want to see also measuring numbers to get something into their brain what emotion should tell them right now. How do you measure the impact of cleanup initiatives on local environments, or do you measure them?
You can't only manage what you can measure, also something like that, and it's exactly also here in the in these sustainability topic. So through regular audits, also brand audits. So we do brand audits. We look into the trash, into the waste, and see it's a Coca-Cola plastic bottle again. So we know who are the companies who are mainly. In the process, in the problem process, and then we can go again in communication with these organizations and see how we can change. Hopefully, we hope we can change it in the future. So audits are really important to see what kind of trash is on the street, is in the river, is in the ocean, and yes, mostly more than 50% is plastic. This is a big issue what we have, what we see, and it's not only micro and nanoplastic because we find the big things. And later, the main problem, the small things happen from that stuff. So this is really important. The feedback, the communication, talk to people, not only face to face, also by by digitized ways. So we used social media, we use all these communication platforms to communicate, to see what happened, and so we can realize that on World Cleanup Day and also later and earlier, no problem. But on these days, we start at 10 o'clock in New Zealand. We see that in internet. It's possible through these platforms. And then after 10 hours, we are in Germany in. And then after 24 hours, the cleanup wave ends on Hawaii. So and social media and internet, all these things make it possible that you can visible make it visible how these huge impact can be.
Wow. Yeah, I think this is super important that you make it visible and emotional also, that the people know I'm a part of something. And it's not just the numbers, you mentioned Coca-Cola. How do they react, by the way? I mean, I know that Coca-Cola has a sustainability manager, but do they react on that? Are there any activities then following that?
They also do cleanups. Everybody, every company. Meanwhile, I think also all good ones and the bad ones, all of them are doing cleanups so far. The question, how true is that? Is it greenwashing or is it a real change, a real transition of the normative way of the vision of the company? This is the main question. Doing, they all do, they all react. Yes, sure. Because, but what we really say, we want not blaming anybody. We don't blame companies. We want to find a solution because blaming makes no sense. We have to go together for the future. And this is for that we do the print audits.
It's great how you see it. And I completely agree with you because, I mean, even if it's greenwashing, if they do something for the better, let's do them something for the better. If they don't believe it, but just do it. I am sure that many people believe in that, even if they don't do it. And many it comes by doing it that they understand day by day even more what they are doing and why it's so necessary. So I'm completely with you. It's not about judging, it's about involving and putting the energy exactly on that. And this is something I really like about your work too. And I mean, it's not that you stayed with a cleanup with a just plastic waste collecting. You said also we have to do digital cleanups, and there you came up with the idea of Planet and Pixel. So what inspired the integration of digital cleanup efforts with environmental sustainability?
The awareness that digital data also consumes energy, and these burdens the environment led to the initiative of integrating digital cleanups also into the environmental protection efforts, because the data, just one figure, 900 billion tons CO2 is produced in the moment by the internet and the technic, the topology of the internet. So this is around about 4 to 7% of the worldwide energy consumption. Yeah, if you look to the planes and to the air, in this field, 3% of the global CO2 consumption comes from that. So if we expect in 2030, around about 12 to 14% of the worldwide energy consumption is done by IT. And so we have to be aware about that. So the cloud is not in the sky, and the cloud is in the real topology in the world. It's placed in data centers, real data centers. And the data centers are growing up like mushrooms at the moment. Like, yeah, yes. this is one big thing.
Absolutely. And can you explain the concept behind Planet and Pixels projects?
Yeah, Planet Pixels aims to raise exactly awareness about the ecological footprint of digital activities and to offer practical solutions for sustainable digital behavior, because everybody here the same, everybody can do something and it's easy to do.
Exactly, yes. And what do you think, I mean, if we talk about a few years further, what can Planet and Pixel do by raising awareness? How much percentages do you think can be saved with energy if all people would be willing to follow this, what Planet and Pixel asks them to do?
The main thing we are forcing is to avoidance, or is the avoidance approach. Because if we can save, we will see. It's really hard to see the data and to analyze the data. But for the person, for the human, the avoidance is the biggest thing. And for that, we promoting a sustainable data culture. This is one of the big thing in data culture. Also included is data security, big thing. We can talk hours about only data security if you go deeper in that. But the data culture is one big thing. That we focusing on relevant data. We know it's actual from IBM and also Fujitsu says that 20% of our data is business critical. That means that 80% is partly waste. It's called rot data. 40% is rot data. It's redundant, obsolete, and trivial data. Then we have 50% of our whole data structure in the moment is dark data. It's still there, but we don't know where and why and for what. And this is, we have to avoid. Not to clean, not to delay. It's not an opportunity. we can do that with double pictures or double videos or redundant things, then that's okay. But normally we have to avoid. It's like the plastic bottle. We have to avoid the plastic bottle comes to the ocean, and then the problem is solved. And here is exactly in the digital world is the same.
Yeah, absolutely. It might be that some listeners, hopefully, like to follow that and do something and would like to contribute to digital sustainability in their daily lives. Do you have maybe 3 or 4 or 5 tips for them, what they could do if they want to start right now?
Information and education. So maybe if you start with the five-minute rule. The five-minute rule suggests that tasks can be completed within 5 minutes should be done immediately to increase efficiency and avoid procrastination. In connection with the Kaizen philosophy, everybody can Google it, but Ditch focuses on continuous improvement through small, consistent steps. Individuals can contribute significantly to digital sustainability through daily five-minute actions. And in these five-minute actions, make a easy digital detox. Put your phone in flight mode, 5 minutes every day. 5 minutes the next day, look in your email account and make your email entrance clean. Or go look how many newsletters you got, click some of them off and go off. So you reduce the daily load of communication, and this saves, on the one hand, energy, and it's also good for you. Yeah, it's against stress. It makes your stress level much easier and much better in that case. Resilience is the big thing, the big topic in that. Because we have too much communication also. We have to reduce the communication rate that we got every day.
Absolutely. So digital sustainability is also digital detox in one way. And people can do 2 things, and one for the good for themselves, but also for the environment, right?
Absolutely. Totally agree, yes.
When we talked about We Create Future, the book which is now getting to be in our hand, holding our hands in a few weeks, what inspired you to join this book project, and what message do you hope to convey with it?
Yeah, that's a really great project. And the participation was inspired by the opportunity to present concrete solutions for a sustainable future together with other visionaries and doers.
Right, yeah. I mean, it is, I think, for me, it's also this book something we hold in our hand, we can give it to somebody else, read it, take the message, live the message, right? So it's something which is easy to grab. It's different to look around. There could be something contaminated by Chernobyl, which you can't see, which you can't grab, where you don't have a real storytelling about. With the book, we transport storytelling, right?
Absolutely, yeah. It's so it shows that every individual has the ability to and the responsibility to actively contribute to creating a better world. But you need how you can find these information. And so you need, by the end of the day, you need role models, best practice. We have to learn from each other. We have not to design or redesign the wheel year by year and by company by company. We have to work together. Exactly, I'm back in the triple bottom line. This is how it works. If we can challenge that, and if we can find a way over the levels from the politicians to the civil society and with the companies to find a workload, then we have really the chance for a transition.
I like that what you say, this collaborative, this togetherness. And I think this is also something which can restore hope and drive positive change in Germany and also some other countries as soon as we get the translation. Can you share a success story from that what we will have in the book so far, maybe a teamwork or something which shows you that this is something we can give hope to other people with the book?
We talked a little bit earlier about Planet and Pixels, and the Planet and Pixels initiative is exactly a remarkable success story of this book. This initiative arose from the collaboration of the civil society-based World Cleanup community on the one hand with the technology company Fujitsu. It starts 1.5 years earlier, and later on, partners joined, including CIONET Germany, BCBT, Berlin College of Business and Technology, and now our newest partner, Welt der Wunder Media, is also joining. So the goal of Planet and Pixels is to promote a sustainable data culture for everybody, mm-hmm. for kids, for children, and also for employees, and reduce environmental burdens in the digital space for everyone. But it shows how we can work together. And also today, it's a great day today, because today the founding charter of the initiative is being signed. So it's a really good day. And it shows how people work together, or how cooperation can start.
That's super engaging and bringing us a lot of positive vibrations. How can individuals and organizations get involved with Wir schaffen Zukunft, which we bring future with the book, but also with the idea behind and promote sustainability?
So I think everybody or individuals can involve with the easy mindset of start small and local. So and everyone can contribute and start by simple 5-minute tasks every day. And the book Wir schaffen Zukunft is it's like a red line to see how it can be with good practices. The book stands for not only the book, but also the platform behind the book, because the platform is also created in the moment. And the platform is the opportunity for individuals and but also for organizations to join, work together, show examples. Others, individuals can see how others are doing that, got be motivated and start small own local action. And yeah, by the end of the day, think global, act local. This is the main thing behind that.
Thank you so much. Thank you for this engaging discussion and for inspiring insights. I wish that many listeners got now the idea that they should take part at the World Cleanup Day, but also in every small action in their daily life. And I'm looking very much forward to our ongoing exchange and our common projects and the impact we will continue to make together. Thank you, Holger.
Thank you, Annabelle. Thank you, the team.
So after the commercial break, we'll continue with the introduction of an inspiring book, this one, that we've selected for you. Thank you so much. See you again in 2 minutes.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Now let's move on to the introduction of an inspiring book that can be a life changer. Today it is Your Badass. So this book is written by Jen Sincero, and it's energizing and empowering self-help book that is funny as it's inspiring. Written with wit and charisma, Sincero combines motivational advice with personal anecdotes, offering readers practical tools to improve their lives. The book focuses on helping individuals realize their potential, boost their confidence, and make bold, positive changes. Sincero's tone is unapologetical, bold, and humorous, yet it's full of genuine insights that motivate readers to embrace their true selves. It's an accessible guide that encourages readers to stop playing small and take charge of their lives. Whether your straightforward advice with a lighthearted, whether you'd like to improve your career, relationships, or personal growth, this book delivers you empowering messages. It's a call to action, asking readers to embrace their inner badass and confidently pursue the life they deserve. By the end of Sincero, a combination of humor, personal reflection, and practical tips makes this an uplifting read for anyone looking for self-improvement. Where is she? She is an author, motivator, speaker, and life coach known for her humorous and no-nonsense approach to self-help. Before she became a successful author, Sincera struggled with self-doubt and financial instability. Her life wasn't always as glamorous as her current success. She grew up in a middle-class family and, like many others, faced challenges growing up, especially in regard to building self-confidence and navigating her career. A breakthrough came where she soon decided to take self-control of her life, eventually becoming a best-selling author and motivational speaker. Sincera's writing style reflects her personal journey, direct, relatable, and full of humor. Her passion for helping people improve their lives and overcome limiting beliefs is the cornerstone of her work. Beyond her bestseller, Sincera has written a number of other books focused on personal development and self-empowerment. She holds a deep interest in the power of mindset and visualization in creating lasting change, and she thrives to make her teachings accessible to people from all walks of life. So, what is her background? She wrote this book after she had a series of breakthroughs in her own life. The book came from a desire to share the lessons she learned and to help others to realize their potential. After years of struggling financially and battling feelings of inadequacy, she found that embracing self-love, confidence, and an unapologetic attitude was a key to turning her life around. Motivated by her own transformation, Sincera created a guide to help people tap into their inner power and stop limiting themselves. The book was written for anyone looking to change their lives, but who may be struggling with doubts, fear, or negative beliefs. It's not just a book about positive thinking, but about taking tangible, actionable steps to create the life you want. The essence of the book is rooted in Sincera's personal experiences of overcoming self-imposed barriers, finding success, and learning to love herself unconditionally. She believes that anyone can achieve their dreams with the right mindset and practical action. So you're a badass is a fun, empowering guide to help readers to increase their power, eliminate self-doubt, and take bold action towards creating the life you desire. When I read the book, I did afterwards a small list of 7 tips, which I created from the book, which is first, create your own life and believe in yourself. Let go of the limiting beliefs that hold you back. The first step to success is to believe that you are capable of achieving great things. Second, take responsibility for your life. Stop blaming external circumstances and take full responsibility for your actions, thoughts, and results. Use positive affirmations. Reinforce your self-worth and power through affirmations that shape your mindset for success. Surround yourself with positivity. Build a supportive environment by surrounding yourself with people who uplift and encourage you. And embrace failure as a learning opportunity. Don't fear failure. See it as a stepping stone to success and a chance to grow. Take bold action. Stop waiting for the perfect moment and start taking action toward your goals, even if it's imperfect. And practice gratitude. Cultivate a gratitude practice to stay focused on what's going well in your life and to attract more of it. I would like to give you here for the review also a summary with 5 quotes I took from the book from the author. You're a badass. You're incredible. Amazing, gorgeous, talented, and magnificent person. And you're worthy of all the love, success, and happiness the world has to offer. When you choose to believe in yourself, the universe will conspire to help you make your dreams come true. Fear is for people who are afraid to dream. Don't let your fear of failure stop you from following your dreams. You get what you think you deserve. The way to change your life is to change your mindset and your sense of self-worth. Your universe is a mirror that reflects what you're putting out there. If you believe that you are a badass, the world will reflect that back to you. So this book is a joyful and empowering read. And I would like to start that you get a little bit out of it and feel what is it and what this book could help you. So let me start. with chapter 7. I know you are, but what am I? A friend of mine, a brilliant writer, once caught me in panic when she suddenly became frozen with fear of the subject matter of the book she was working on and could no longer bring herself to write it. The book was, among many other splendid things, very personal, dark, and twisted. And my friend was concerned that it was too much, that it was crossing the line. That she was exposing herself as a giant, weirdo, pervert freak. This brings up something that's so important to have a firm grasp on if you're going to get anywhere near reaching your full potential in this life as a writer, as an artist, as a business person, as a parent, as a bachelor, a baker, a candlestick maker, or as a fully realized and evolved human being in general. Do not waste your precious time giving one single crap about what anybody else thinks of you. Imagine how liberating that would be. Other people's opinion motivate every move we make in our teens and our 20s. And as we age, we are moving in the right direction. Our obsession with how we are perceived by others begins to trickle away. But very few of us are able to escape its pointless grasp completely. Meanwhile, the truth is, the only question you ever need to consider when making decisions about your life are, is this something I want to be, do, or have? Is this going to take me in the direction I want to go? And third, is this going to screw over anybody else in the process? So I would like to jump on to page 200, which is about money. And as we're having currently the month of World Women's Day, and it's all about gender pay gap, that women and men are not having the same rights in the world in a lot of countries, it is also about money and our relationship to money. Many years ago, Los Angeles was hit by a relentless rainstorm the likes of which I've never seen in my life. It rained for what seemed like 40 days and 40 nights, non-stop and hard. Rivers overflowed, houses slid down hillsides, dead or wrecked cows throughout the most image-conscious city in the world. This was the kind of rain you didn't want to be driving around in anything, let alone a 23-year-old junker convertible with a leaky roof, no grill, a back window that was duct taped shut, and a front tire that went flat every 3 days. I'd been in the market for a new car for a long time and couldn't find anything I really loved or thought I could afford. But as I sat there in a puddle, driving to the supermarket with a trash bag under my ass and an old t-shirt slammed in the door to keep the leaking to a minimum, it occurred to me that perhaps I should spend up my search. At the time, I didn't have a whole lot of money, but I have my own business that I was trying to grow. The problem was I felt stuck in that place where even though I wanted bigger and better things for myself, monetarily, as well as feeling more mighty and self-actualized in general, I was worried that I raised my prices, I'd lose all my client and my self-respect. Or that I'd get called out as a money-grubbing pig or a fraud who had no right to charge that much. I was also scared that if I went big and grew my business, I wouldn't be able to handle it. I'd have to hire tons of people. I'd spend my time doing things I hated. I get so busy I'd never get to travel. I'd wither in the trap being my computer fun and freedom skidding away in my rearview mirror, never to be seen again. Blah, blah, blah. I could fill up about four more many pages of reasons why I was where I was. But suffice is to say, I was basically playing at the level of someone who drives around in a car like the one I was driving around in. And the most painful part really was that even though our signs pointed to broke, clueless, and stuck, deep down I knew I could be doing so much better. Which is why, even though the sound of crickets could be heard echoing throughout my empty bank account, I wandered into the Audi dealership, took the brand new Q5 for a spin, and let the sales guy rattle on and on about leather this and premium that. In my head, I was thinking, do you have an idea who I am? I'm just taking a fantasy break before heading over to Honda, but in my heart I knew better. Way down deep, it was about much more than just a damn car. It was about no longer being the kind of person who takes what she can get, and finally becoming the kind of person who creates exactly what she wants. It was large, March. And the curious part of me was terrified to grow, and part of me wanted to blast out and be huge. And also because I love to drive more than I love to eat. I tortured myself over which car to buy for weeks. I finally whittled it down to two options. The Honda CR-V, a perfectly excellent little SUV with the following attributes. Okay, garage lodge, a sunroof, room for friends, a comfy ride. Or the Audi Q5, a stick of butter on four wheels with the following attributes. A sunroof that takes up the entire roof of the car. Room for friends, for a lot of friends. Sexy, flashy, expensive, terrifying. I came very close to buying the Honda. But as I sat there, test driving it for the 10th time, trying to convince myself that it was the one, I couldn't shake the nagging truth that I was in love with something else. Buying the Honda would have been the sensible thing to do. But I knew that venture, true love, and a whole new way of life awaited on the other side of my comfort zone. Blasting through this comfort zone is what I want to talk about here. Purchasing the Audi should have had me waking up screaming in the middle of the night because it cost the kind of money I would normally only consider spending on something like mandatory heart surgery. Certainly not on something as frivolous as a car. But after I bought it, I slept like a baby. Because once I made the decision to buy it, I also made the decision to get over my shit and become the kind of person who can make the kind of money to buy the kind of car or who can do anything else I want to. I almost instantly came up with a way to pay off the Audi and am certain that if I'd bought the Honda, I'd still be struggling to pay for it. But because I'd still be playing small, I'd still be in the mindset that I can't afford more, that I'm the kind of person who has to struggle to get whatever she can. I can't that I can't break out of my old mold and to go something completely out of my reach. So when you up-level your idea of what's possible and decide to really go for it, you open yourself up to the means that accomplish it as well. And I'm not talking about going out and recklessly blowing all your money or stupid crap. I'm talking about expanding your beliefs about what is available to you in all areas of your life. And for the purposes of this chapter, I'm going to focus on what kind of money you believe is there for you to purchase the things and experiences you truly desire. Whether or not the money is currently in your bank account, it is irrelevant. I didn't have the money either when I bought my new car. When you're available to play a bigger game, that is quit your boho job and invest in your own business, buy a house, send your kids to private schools, hire a coach, hire a house cleaner, buy a new mattress, you either need to pay for it with the money you have or manifest the money if you don't have it already. And manifesting it is going to be pretty damn hard if you insist that not only it is not there for you, but that you aren't the kind of person who could ever make it or pay it off if you borrowed it. So you see, there's a lot more in it and the Badass book, which can help you to feel better and to walk another way. But in the end, your beliefs hold the key to your financial success and to your path of life. And unfortunately, there we come to an end. And I hope you liked today's series. And I hope that you liked being with us today. Join us again next week as we continue on this empowering journey with you, sharing real stories of triumph, upliftment, and empowerment. Your presence and engagement mean the world to us. And we appreciate you taking the time to tune in. Don't hesitate to get involved. Thank you for being part of our community. And until next time, keep shining and empowering others. Together we can rise, and together we can make the world a better place. Together we can make the world a sustainable place. It's worth living in. Thank you.
I'll pick my battles cause I know I'm gonna win the war. I'm not rattled cause I shattered all of this before. Steadier than steel cause I'm ready with my shield and sword. Back on the saddle cause I gathered all my strength for more. And I won't.